The underdog is howling.
Stanford Steve and the Bear.
Ah, yes. A home team getting points. What's better than that?
Welcome in. Our first edition, we're going to call this season preview. We gave out your season win totals last week.
We'll call it second. We'll call it second season preview. We previewed the season in the first one.
All right. Here we want to just try and dive in, get you some nuggets, some notes on teams that caught my eye and I know caught Bear's eye. So we're just going to go with the conference and give you what we got on the conference. Today our plan is the Group of Five, the Pac-12, Notre Dame. So we're going to try and get in the Mountain West, the Sun Belt, Conference USA, the MAC, the American, and all that sticks out to us there. If you listened last week, we have teams from all these that we gave out. I know we will retouch on those. But, Bear, I need to congratulate you. I mean, are you a horse player Hall of Famer now after your weekend?
Not a Hall of Famer. No, there isn't an NHC tour Hall of Fame. But, yeah, that was quite the weekend. And it was a little bittersweet at the end because I led with three races to go and then wound up getting passed. And I had a decision to make in that last race where I could have either A, gone for it and picked the longer shot on the board that would have allowed me to win win about $250,000, or I could have played for second place and used the favorite that I liked and risk the guy in second place playing the same horse, which would have meant I was drawing dead.
But what was second place? How much was second place?
Second place was 97 grand.
Okay.
And I did wind up going for it, which I figured I got an opportunity to win $250,000. I got to go for it. And the favorite did wind up winning, and I did put a nice chunk of change on the favorite to win, which was good. I felt a little bit better about that. But I wound up that if I would have played the horse in the contest, I would have gotten second place. But I had no idea what the second place guy was going to do. So, yeah, I took home about 50 grand and finished third, and it was a great week. And the great part about it was, one of my good friends and another horse player who you may have been familiar with, I've been with Basil DeVita, who's been involved with the WWE, been involved with the XFL. He's a really good friend of mine and horse player. He actually wound up finishing fourth. So I finished third, he finished fourth. So it was a lot of fun to go back and forth with him in that spa and surf showdown there at Horse Tourneys over the weekend. So it was weird too, because I wasn't planning on entering it. But I had a nice Wednesday at Saratoga, so I was like, you know what? I'll reinvest some of those winnings that I had and take a shot. And I knew my wife had a bunch of stuff going on outside the house on Saturday, so I was going to be able to just kind of sit around most of the day and cap. And it worked out well. But yeah, I put two good days together, and I'm pretty happy about the weekend that I had. It was a good feeling. And to hear from a lot of people, like I had friends out at Del Mar who were like they were telling, oh yeah, Bears leading it in the contest. So it was good to hear from a lot of people, and I know a lot of people, fellow horse players, rooting me on. So I'm in a good frame of mind for the upcoming NHC, which will be for me in January. It's good that I'm not going to be at the one next week, because I had to have my entry pushed off until 2022 because of the college football season starting, and they had to move it from February. So they were kind enough to move my qualification to January 2022. But yeah, I probably used up a lot of my good karma and good results last weekend. So I might have been up against it next week in the NHC. So, but we're happy. I appreciate the shout out. It was a great weekend.
Come on. Somebody's going to win 50K on this podcast. We're going to talk about it. I don't care what anyone says, all right? Calling the shots
exactly
here.
Right.
Okay. All right, so there's that. Let's dive into it. I've got a butt. Let's start with the Mountain West, okay? And obviously, I think what everyone talks about when you first bring up a conference, say the Mountain West, is, you know, what's the coaching change? You know, when we talk about these Group of Five conferences, these are where you're going to find your newest head coaches, I want to say, at the Power Five level. And right off the get there in the Mountain West, you have the favorite in Boise, who's got a new coach. You know, Harsin goes to Auburn, which kind of still felt unexpected to me.
Weird.
But but I'm not that close to it. I'm not going to act like I am. But they bring in a guy who played there, coached there. I believe he was there 2 years prior in Andy Avalos, who comes into a great situation. Hank Bachmeier is a guy who came out on the scene in his first game in Tallahassee a couple of years ago and just balled out and was a household name from then on. Dealt with COVID, injuries the last 2 years. But they are the class of it. And when I bring up Avalos, I had to mention that Harsin won 78% of his games. Peterson won 88% of his games. Hawkins won 82% of his games. Those are the last three head coaches. Four straight Mountain West title games they've played in. They've won two. So it feels like it's pretty full. The cupboards are full at Boise. They're the favorite. Avalos brings in Tim Plow, who actually was the offensive coordinator at UC Davis, whose head coach is Dan Hawkins, to bring this thing full circle. They were at the top of the rankings offensively. So I think, you know, Boise with their tight ends and all that stuff, that they weren't afraid to pound you in the ground and make these lower teams, you know, play their style of ball. I do feel like the conference is catching up. But Boise right there, a win total of 9. They are the favorite to win the Mountain West. The next favorite is Nevada, then San Jose State, then Wyoming. I think it's between these four. But when I look at Boise, real interesting schedule. Open up at UCF, and then week 3, they get Oklahoma State to come in. So when you're looking at that win total, I think they're going to win the Oklahoma State game. That UCF one's tough with the travel going down there. I know they won in Tallahassee a couple of years ago. But what do you think of Boise off the start? You have them as the favorite, even though San Jose State is the defending champs?
They should be the favorite odds-wise, but I would take a flyer on San Jose State repeating here. They're 9-2 to win the league, and they don't play Boise in the crossover during the regular season. They get San Diego State, Fresno, and Wyoming at home. Dick Starkle and Brennan and those guys, everybody's basically back on offense with the exception of their wide receiver. And they should be able to plug in. I mean, I believe my receiver had 47 catches last year. It wasn't like it was a massive difference between him and the rest of the team. I think they have guys there who can step up and win. You got your running backs back, the entire offensive line back. Defensively, nearly everybody returned together. 2020 starters back on this team that won last year, experienced the season that they went through, they're not sure where they were going to practice or land and having to relocate for the preseason. The reason I like them more than I do Nevada, who's the same price, I mean, people I think automatically just default to Nevada because of Carson Strong and the familiarity with his name. But yes, Nevada gets the Spartans at home. But they also have to go to Boise. They also have to go to San Diego State. They also have to go to Fresno. The schedule sets up for a couple of more opportunities to lose, I think, than what San Jose State's schedule sets up to potentially lose. So at plus 450, I'm going to take a shot on Mr. Brennan's team repeating as Mountain West champs.
I agree with you there. I did like this stat I saw. Every quarterback, running back, tight end who recorded a stat is back for San Jose State. Obviously, I'm leaving out the wide receivers who need to step up. They have an opener at home, and then they don't have another, I think it's Southern Utah, and then they don't play a home game until October. And you mentioned they don't play Boise or Air Force, which is a nice plus. But, I just what Brennan has done there, they were the best story in the sport to me last year. 7.5 is an interesting number, too. I would lean over there just knowing what I'm getting with the coaching staff and returning starters. But I did want to touch on a couple of these lower tier teams because to me in the offseason, I was thinking Fresno State had a chance. Fresno State, give me them. Mm-hmm. Kalen DeBoer is a really well thought of coach. I think he did a great job coming in and putting his footprint on a program and you know, and only playing 6 games. They're number 1 in the conference in offense, number 5 in the nation in passing. They got Jake Haener, the UW transfer. I believe he had 300-yard passing games and 6, and I want to say 2 400-yard games in his last 3 games. The defense is up and down, and they play that volatile style. They were 3rd in the country in sacks, but they give up big plays time after time. And then that brutal loss to New Mexico really put a damper on what I thought was a promising season last year. So I was coming in saying, all right, give me Fresno State as a shot here. I saw some 20-1s out there. The season win total was 6, but this schedule is absolutely brutal. Now, they get the con coming in. Which I have chalked up as a UConn over better. I have that as a loss for the Huskies. I believe the spread is up to 27.5. But going back to Fresno, at Oregon, at UCLA, at Hawaii, at Wyoming, at San Diego State, at San Jose State. They also play Boise at home. That's a lot to ask for in this schedule. And we know that, you know, Nevada, that the prowess that they're coming in, they're obviously with them on that side. So for a team to me where I thought I was going to be high and thinking about betting the over on Fresno, I can't do it there. The schedule is too tough and not knowing what to – I don't want to say guarantee, but what to have a good feeling about on that defensive side. So Fresno State I thought was going to be a play for me, but it's not a play for me.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I wouldn't be opposed to taking a flyer on Wyoming either. Their season win total is 7.5. Mm-hmm. Now, again, their conference schedule, go to San Jose State, they got to go to Boise State. But at the same time, the defense is going to be one of the better teams in the league. Valaday, I think, is a difference maker at running back. Can Chambers stay healthy? I mean, that was the thing last year. They lost some brutal, low-scoring games because they had injuries on the offensive side of the football. But in terms of looking at that win total, 7.5, like their non-conference, Montana State, they should beat. Northern Illinois is one of the worst teams in the MAC. They go to the Wren on September 25th when you're coming back up to Connecticut for that game. Mm-hmm. And they got the defending MAC champion Ball State coming to Laramie early in September too. So like that's probably the makings of like a 3-1 non-conference, I would think. Mm-hmm. I think between the game at Connecticut and the home game against Ball State, they should be able to get at least one of those. Maybe 8 wins is possible here for Craig Ball's team, as long as they can just, the way he's going to teach defense and the people that know they got some coordinator changes, but I think he brought in guys who are familiar with his style of ball and guys that he's familiar with. So I wouldn't see that as like I wouldn't expect a huge variation there in what we've seen from Wyoming in recent years. So in addition to San Jose State, I'd put a little something on Wyoming to win that league as well and go potentially over that 7.5 season win total.
I did have some listeners reach out to me and ask for some Wyoming thoughts. So there you have
there
it.
There you go.
Bear. Now, when it comes to the Mountain West, as we finish up here on this conference, there's just so many unknowns to me. Like you look at New Mexico, what are they going to be? Utah State. I mean, that's been a good program, but not from what I'm reading now.
Well, what's UNLV going to be? I mean, they've recruited well, but I mean, this is kind of like a year zero. I mean, who knows what to expect in terms of a win here.
And then Hawaii is the ultimate one where, you know, how does it set up when you go out there?
High-octane
what do
football.
They have come when they come to you? It's pretty brutal when you look at what they bring to the table because you're trying to have a feeling about it, but they're just the ultimate. Just you never know. And obviously, everybody seems to have a good time when they go over to play them on the island. I do want to point out San Jose State. How about this travel? Sunday, September 19th, obviously 12:30 a.m. Eastern, but that's Saturday night, the 18th, at Hawaii. The next Saturday, they're at Western Michigan. So
you think they're any Honolulu, Kalamazoo nonstops?
Oh, man. I did see a friend traveling this summer where I was shocked. There was I believe it was Maui to Charlotte straight. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I can believe that on American. Yeah, that makes sense.
All right.
They got long hauls to do that.
One other team I wanted to touch on was Air Force, who, when you look at roster changeover, is only going to be one way affected by people getting the extra year. Obviously, the service academies, you only get 4 years. No matter what, that's it. And you can't really get transfers in, and you can't transfer out. So they've just lost guys. They're not gaining anybody. When you're looking at the returning production numbers and all that stuff, all theirs is going to be down because of, you know, they're not able to bring anything in, and guys just have to leave.
Yeah, they lose on both ends of the extreme.
Yes, exactly.
All these teams with the super seniors, yeah.
Yeah, and that includes their whole O-line. Now, Calhoun's been awesome. Four losing seasons in 14 years, 10 bowl games. Obviously, that had that great year in 2019 where they 11-2. Hazeek Daniels is the running back. He's back. They do have to play both service games on the road. The Army game, I think, is a neutral site in Dallas. Or no, it's at the Rangers' new stadium. But their first six games, I think, are winnable. So Air Force is a team with an over-under of 6.5. I'll take a chance on Calhoun knowing what he has and getting over 6.5 wins there, seeing how that schedule plays out. Like I said, when you look at the prognosticators, you know, with the returning numbers and what they have coming back and starters and all that stuff, it's not going to be good, but it's just a trust factor I have with Air Force and Calhoun, mm-hmm. who's been totally a great program. So I lean over with Air Force on that one. So that is what I have from the Mountain West. All right, you pick. We want to go back to the Fun Belt?
Let's go on to the Sun Belt now, where I think most people are going to just think that it's going to be a battle between Appalachian State, Coastal Carolina, and Louisiana for this league. But I'm not opposed to taking a flyer on a team like Georgia State, which I think the Panthers may have been my worst pick on the board last year when I took them plus the points against Coastal Carolina, and they lost. I just have to remember the score here.
51-0.
51-0, yeah. Mr. Elliott.
50 burger.
Lost to Mr. McCall and Ms. Shots, who wound up going undefeated, and then had that great bowl game, which they just came up just short. But you're looking at a team here where they've got their entire offense back. They got a ton of guys back on defense. It's a team that nearly beat Appalachian State last year, took Louisiana to overtime, the other favorite. Like, they're right there talent-wise. I know they got to go to Coastal. They got to go to Louisiana, and that certainly doesn't help them. They do host Appalachian State. All the other home games are winnable. UL Monroe is one of the road games. It would not surprise me to see Georgia State potentially be a dark horse in this league here. And at 25-1, I do like them as a sleeper to win the Sun Belt if you're looking for an opportunity to maybe play against some of these favorites.
To me, when you look at this conference, Bear, is how unbalanced it is when you look at the divisions. You know, like, I mean, the East is so much tougher than the West. And with that, I think the biggest wild card to me is what's Appalachian State going to be? Obviously, one of the top-tier programs in the conference as a whole, when you go back and look at it when they got in, their schedule is really interesting. They play East Carolina at home week one. They go to the U. There's a game with Marshall. You mentioned they go to Georgia State. They go to Louisiana, and then they host Coastal all in a row. There's a bye week mixed in there.
With a Tuesday and a Wednesday game mixed in there as well.
Yeah. So to me, them, I mean, we know what they are from a talent standpoint. What are you really getting seeing how Coastal's made that improvement? And that's where I think it goes back to Coastal, because mm-hmm. when you look at them with the season win total of 10, they put it, like you mentioned Georgia State. They put it on them last year. Georgia State's going to remember that. They're going to be mounted up for that.
10's a tough number, man. That's no margin for error.
Yes, exactly.
At all.
Yep.
Back to App State. Like,
yep.
What do we think of Chase Bryce? Like he's there now. He was terrible at Duke. People thought he was going to kind of be ever since he had that big throw for Clemson a couple of years ago. Like, his career has certainly taken a downward turn. I think people were expecting a lot from him last year at Duke, and he just couldn't stop turning the ball over. Now he goes to a team which defensively should be pretty good. He's got some guys around him to hand the ball off to and throw to, but this is a big opportunity, I think, for him to try and get that bad taste of last year out of his mouth. But like you mentioned, that schedule is no cup of tea, and he's going to face some good teams here.
Yes. And I mean, like you said, when you're going to go to a program from Clemson to Duke, everything is going to be magnified, especially on the when you make the mistakes of giving the other team the ball when it comes down to that, and knowing that you're the less inferior team a lot of times. And that's what people are going to point to. Big name, and did not even come close to meeting expectations. So how does he fare now that he's on a better team in a weaker conference? That's a big factor, because we're expecting you to make plays. Man, this schedule, Appalachian State, is really interesting to me. So when you look at the East, I like your Georgia State call. That's definitely worth a shot.
Just noticed that Sean scheduled all Georgia State for homecoming this year. And
Coastal does have an interesting game at Buffalo, week 3, I'm interested in, because Buffalo's a team we'll talk about.
Coastal, it will be interesting to see what type of talent base and depth that Jamie Chadwell has built up there, because you lose CJ Maribel, who was a big part of that running, because he was the running game, essentially, and you lose Taron Jackson, best defensive lineman. Those two losses are key, and we'll see if a program like Coastal is able to replace those type of players in back down season up.
South Alabama, I know people have chimed in on them.
High on South Alabama, too.
4.5 is the number for the season win total.
The problem is with South Alabama in terms of their win total is their conference schedule. They get Louisiana at home. They got to go to Appalachian State. They get Coastal Carolina. They get all three of them, and they got to go to Troy. Like, it's a tough schedule. I would rather play, but at the same time, I think they're going to go 3-0 in the non-conference.
That's exactly what I was just going to say.
I like them week 1 against Southern Miss. I think we might have talked about that last week. I'm not sure. But I think the wrong team is favored in that game. Mm-hmm. Go to Bowling Green, who's a terrible team in the MAC, might be the worst team in the country. And then you have Alcorn State. Like that's potentially 3-0. So you're looking for a couple of other wins. Like, they could go to potentially Texas State and win. You can go to Louisiana Monroe and win. But they're going to have to get it before they hit November. They'll probably have to be Butch Jones. They have to do Arkansas State before they get the last four games at Troy, at Appalachian State, at Tennessee, and Coastal. So you'd really want to have those wins prior to the calendar flipping to November. But I'm high on this team. I think they have an opportunity to be pretty good. Remember, you get Bentley coming in there now.
Yes.
At quarterback. They got some players, and it just seemed like the program the last couple of years just kind of stagnated. Remember, they played Nebraska really tough in Lincoln. They just never really kind of built on that. So, but I think they got one of the right guys there, Kane Womack, who's familiar with those surroundings and the staff that he's assembled. I like South Alabama this year. I think they're going to get somebody.
I like that, just being known that I could start 3-0. So I'm with you on the over there, the Jags from South Alabama. What else? Anybody else? I mean, you gave out Monroe.
Yeah, we talked about Monroe last week. I don't know if we need to really go through that again, but I am on you. And the better bet that I like is at South Point, where you can just play UL Monroe under 1.5 Sunbelt wins. If you're going to give him the win against Jackson State, what two Sunbelt teams are they going to beat? I mean, they go to Coastal, they go to Appalachian State, and they go to Louisiana. That's 0-3. They host Troy, they host Georgia State, and they host Arkansas State. They got to win two of those three in order for you to lose that bet. So if you make a trip out to see Mr. Andrews and Mr. Malulo and Mr. Vaccaro, go play. Am I allowed to give the rotation number? Because I wrote this stuff out already.
Absolutely.
42-46, UL Monroe, under 1.5.
Get on it, people. Got to get a Texas State shout in here. Schedule brutal as always. Yeah. They get Baylor to come to San Marcos, which is nice, but then they got to go to the Granite, Eastern Michigan, September 25th. Not sure how I feel about that one.
The factory,
of course. At Georgia State, at Louisiana, they do get Monroe. Their number's 4.5. That's a tough number. I think they can get to 5. Georgia Southern's a team we haven't touched on, who's obviously, in my opinion, the greatest uniforms in the sport. So there is that. They closed the year with at Coastal, at Arkansas State. Arkansas State's a team I got nothing on for you.
Yeah, who knows what to expect with new head coach.
It's tough.
Good for him for getting another opportunity, though.
Absolutely. Can't hate on that. Incarnate Word also on that Texas State schedule. But I do expect big things from Louisiana here. They talk about the production returning. I do think, though, they all are overlooking Elijah Mitchell, who was their running back last year, who I believe is in camp with the Niners. I think he got hurt, but he was a tremendous player for them. I think it's the most interesting game to me, week one, when they go to Austin to play, because you know, as much as you don't want to give them credit for their win in the Ames last year, still, they are going to come in with a physical mentality. You know what you're going to get from a Napier coach team, and Texas better buckle up, because they're going to get a serious team coming in. I would like to see Levi be more accurate throwing the football, and that's what you're going to need to do if you're going to win another game on the road against the Power 5 team. So that has all my attention week one. I do expect the Louisiana Coastal matchup in this title game.
I can see myself being on Texas, by the way.
Okay. We can get to that in a little bit. But it's Coastal, I still think McCall is phenomenal in what he's done. That offense is a pain in the butt to defend and prepare for. You know, it's one thing where you think you got assignments covered, and then they throw a couple more wrinkles in where they're bringing guys underneath or over the top and out formation you. And it's just everything it's cracked up to be. So as magical as last year was, I don't think it'll be that, but I do expect Coastal to be there in that title game. Anything else?
Seven 1-score games, by the way, for Louisiana last year.
Yep.
See if that regresses a little bit.
Okay.
You hit on the boys from San Marcos and their opponent on September 25th.
Yep.
And going up to Ypsilanti. I think just turn to the MAC. Like Eastern Michigan, I think has a chance this year. I like them over their season win total. I think they have a lot of experience coming back. This way the schedule works out for them, they're not going to go to Wisconsin and win. Mm-hmm. But your non-conference games, Texas State at home, at UMass, St. Francis at home, and the MAC schedule, you get the bad road teams, the bad teams on the road. Northern Illinois is on the road. Bowling Green is on the road. Miami is like a 50-50 game at home. You can beat Ohio is like a 50-50. Like all of the 50-50 games or the games are going to need to play on their home field, they get it home. You go to Toledo, okay, you'll lose that. But I think this is an over team, and I think they got some guys in the pipeline at running back that they like. I think defensively it sounds like a broken record. We're saying this 20 starters back, as most teams do have an experienced roster here. But I think Eastern Michigan, at some point, they're going to win a lot more of these close games, and I think they have an opportunity to get to 7 or 8, even 8 wins this year. This is a team that was really ripped apart. They had a lot of COVID and a lot of issues, injuries last year, and still managed to rally at the end of the year and win a couple of games that they did. Prior to that, you lost to Kent State. It was a good team by 4. The team that won the MAC last year, you probably should have beaten them. You were right in the game with them. So I think Chris Creighton's team has an opportunity to make some noise in the Mid-America Conference this year.
To me, this is just like the Sun Belt, how unbalanced the divisions are. You look at the West. You mentioned Ball State, who won it last year. You got Western Michigan. Toledo's a team I love. I think they win the conference. I like their season win total. I love everything that they're bringing to the table as far as the coaching staff and roster. Central Michigan's a team that people I have heard plenty of good things about, where they expect improvement. But when you look at the other side, you know, Buffalo, Kent State, Miami of Ohio's been up, you know, as consistent, I believe, as you could say, maybe. Ohio also. But you also have Akron and Bowling Green on the other side in the east of that MAC. So here's a question I have for you. You got to pick one, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather take Bowling Green over 1.5 wins this year, Akron over 2.5 wins, or Northern Illinois over 3.5?
Well, forget the last, because Northern Illinois under 3.5 and under 2 MAC wins is one of my plays.
Okay.
They're going to be terrible. I don't like them at all. So I am a sound under.
Okay.
On Northern Illinois. So it's basically, you said Bowling Green over 1.5.
Yep.
Or Akron over 2.5.
Yes.
So basically, we're picking who wins the Bowling Green Akron Green in Bowling Green on October 9th. Because you're going to assume Bowling Green can beat Murray State. And they don't have a game they can win other than that.
Akron's got Bryant.
And Temple, who's going to stink as well. Oof. Yeah, Temple's going to be bad. Ooh. Wow. I think I would have to take Bowling Green just because if they have the FCS win against Murray State, I can potentially hedge off of it against Akron, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That would probably be the because while I think Akron can beat Temple, how are they going to approach that game at Auburn to start the year? They're going to get
how would you approach it?
See, this is the thing. Like, do you play your starters? Why would you play your starters like any longer than a half? Like, you're not going to win that game with them.
You're never going to get an opportunity to play at Jordan Hare again.
You're not. But, yeah, so give your backups an opportunity to play your starters a half. Like, it'll be 27-0. But I think Akron's further along, though, than Bowling Green.
So do I. Probably. I would take Akron.
I think Ohio has an opportunity to be down this year.
Yes, that's what I said. You're in that other division, too. So yeah. I think that's not even close to how much better the West
is.
Yeah,
you know what? You know what? Flip it. Give me Akron. All right. And I don't want to involve any hedges and playing to get off of something later. No. I think they'll beat Bryant. I think they should beat Bowling Green. And I think they can get one of either Temple or Ohio.
What's Toledo's conference win total?
6 over minus 120. That's rotation number 41-47 for you, if you care.
Now, that's conference wins at Ball State, Northern Illinois, at Central.
We're going over there. Give me over Toledo, 6 conference wins.
Yeah, I was on with someone else the other day, and they liked Toledo at 14 or 15-1 to win the conference as well. And I know someone that works this conference regularly and covers this conference regularly thinks Western Michigan has a chance to be really, really, really good this year, even without our guy, Dwayne Eskridge.
Okay. Yeah, they got some games on that schedule. All right. On to a little CUSA. You want to touch on a little Conference USA?
Sure, why not? You start.
Marshall was a team who I know people jumped all over at the beginning of last year, and they were really good covering. And then they ended the year as bad as possible in a, I believe they got shut out at Rice, and then they were just a debacle in the bowl game. You know, Doc's out of there now.
Weird situation there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, but I still think there's plenty of talent there. Grant Wells was the quarterback who started out great. And I mean, they put up a ton of points early in the year. They obviously got a nice win against Eastern Kentucky to start things out. But then you look at how they ended the year, 20-0 loss to Rice, lost to UAB, and then lost to Buffalo. In those games, those last three games, they combined to score 23 points. When you talk to people around Marshall, they expect Wells to be back. Just thought there was a little hiccup at the end of the season. So let's hope that's the thing moving forward for the kids' sake. And I just, when you look at everybody else in the conference, I mean, I think that still amazes me, Barrett, when you look at this, is the geography in this conference.
Yeah.
Like, it's just all over the place. Now, UAB's been, you know, the model since they've come back into the light with Coach Clark down there. Charlotte's an up-and-coming team. Western Kentucky's a team that just went to Houston Baptist. I don't know if you remember them last year, almost beat Texas Tech, got stopped on the goal line. They went and took, I believe it's the offense coordinator, the quarterback, and the best receiver. So Western Kentucky's just going Houston Baptist over to Kentucky. We'll see how that goes. But Marshall, I still believe, will be the class of the league. We know about your Old Dominion thoughts. You're under. How about those numbers that were thrown around? People were
– Yeah, that was weird.
Maybe I
misread my number, and it was 5, and instead of 3. I don't know. I could have misread that. But, yeah, I don't see this team being very, very much of a threat this year. And the other numbers, you know, the other team that I was really interested in this year was FAU. You had a couple of big changes on offense now with Michael Johnson coming in at quarterback, Chris Perry, the Miami transfer goes there. Mike Stoops, now the defensive coordinator. This is a team that was 10th in the country last year in scoring defense and lost some close games. You talk about Marshall, they get Marshall at home, which is a big deal. I think in terms of who's going to ultimately going to get to the conference championship game, Western Kentucky, they got to go to later in the year. Middle Tennessee, they get at home. FIU, they get at home. Charlotte, they have to go, but they have an open week. And then Old Dominion, who I think is going to be the worst team on that side of the ball. I think FAU has a chance to have a great season. So I would take a shot at them at winning the league and going over their season win total.
Okay. I'm going to say UTSA upends UAB in that side of the conference. I think they're going to play Marshall. I have a question for you. Can UTSA win at Illinois September 4th?
Yes.
Now, Illinois gets that. They get a game before them against Nebraska. That's the only thing that worries me there.
Yeah, they do get a game. And that, the worst thing that could happen for Illinois that week is them looking great and beating Nebraska. Like, then it'll be like, oh, Bielma, coaching change, turning around, big win start of the year. And then they're all of a sudden a double-digit favorite over UTSA, and here come the old Roadrunners into Champaign-Urbana and give them all they can handle.
All right, so I'm going to go UTSA there to upend UAB and play Marshall in that title game. American, we know we've talked at length about Cincinnati. I think about the opportunity. To me, it's a question for you. Who's the biggest threat to them?
It's probably UCF because I like Gus Malzahn as a head coach, and I think that's a coaching upgrade for UCF. I think with the players that they have coming back, and these are guys who came in now under Scott Frost when they were just starting to really elevate the program. I do think it is UCF who is the biggest threat to Cincinnati. Disagree?
It's to me, like, and I know everybody wants thoughts on everything, but I want to see it. I want to see UCF in that first game against Boise. You know, like, I want to know what's going on there and how it looks. I think the world of Gabriel. I think he has a future. And there, you look at the other top teams. Like, I think Memphis is going to take a step back this year. Look at the transfer portal with that team. You know,
if you're looking for a real sleeper, SMU maybe.
To me, the wild card that I'm trying to figure out that I don't have much on, and I trust from what they've built back up from what looked really bleak was Tulsa. They almost got Cincinnati last year. I worry about
Tulsa. They pulled some ridiculous games out of that.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't
Saban Collins.
I don't know. Like, are they going to take us another step forward, or are they going to go way back? You know, like, to me, the overturn there, it scares me. Tulane is I think as deep and as talented as they've been when you read what Fritz has said, but their schedule is brutal with what they bring to the forefront. You know, they got a ton back coming back in areas that they like. He talks about being able to do things offensively. They got Chip Long in as the offensive coordinator now. Chris Watt is an O-line who's on the old O-line, played O-line at Notre Dame, and obviously has Notre Dame familiarity with Chip Long there. So Tulane's a team who I think week in and week out is going to be very interesting to see what those spreads are. They open the season. How about that? They get Oklahoma to come to them, home game. And
a little advanced SEC scouting trip for the Sooners.
Well, it's funny. SEC country. We're the only team that could get that in the conference because we have the backdrop in New Orleans. And I thought it was a great point. I think SMU. I think that's a sleeper there.
Levitt coming in as defensive coordinator. Tanner Mordecai replacing Bichelle. The only thing obviously there is you talk about the brutal schedule for other teams. Like, they go to Houston, they go to Memphis, they go to Cincinnati, they go to Navy. Like, that's a rough deal. I think, and it's a lot to ask, especially after playing TCU in the non-conference in their annual rivalry game. But I think if you look at TCU, SMU rather, with Abilene Christian and North Texas there as well in non-conference games, that they would potentially be a team that I would look at to maybe go over their season win total and maybe worth a shot at winning the American at a big price. If you want to look past, since if you want to look past laying $2 Cincinnati, well, what do you make of, like, just playing devil's advocate with Cincinnati mm-hmm. here, mm-hmm. like you do lose a lot of offensive linemen. Like, are we just handing them this conference just by default, or are there reasons to be concerned here?
You lose
Dokes running back as well. I don't know.
To me, it's the evolution of the offense. You know, they used to be just turn around and give it to the running back 40 times and we'll figure it out because we're going to play defense and that's how we're built. And to me, I expect a big step forward for Ritter, and that's why I'm confident in them. I know everybody's going to talk about the loss of the defensive coordinator, but I expect Fickell to come back in and put more hands on that defense. Yeah. And I see what you're saying with the offensive line. And I really think they have a bitter taste in their mouth from how that ended last year, knowing how they played and seeing the opportunity, because when you're there and you're that close, what do you ask for? Let's get back there. And they got a chance to get right back there with these games at Indiana and at Notre Dame, you know? So I think there's just the idea of having an offseason and knowing what you felt about yourselves, then seeing what happened when you got that opportunity and knowing you have that chance to get right back on it. I love that. And I think Fickell's the perfect guy to capture that and bring that into the program. I know it's not a great word to have, but when you're a team like Cincinnati, you ask for opportunity. And they have
what
that.
What happens in terms of the American, the conference play, if they lose at Indiana and they lose at Notre Dame, and that momentum and that talk of potentially making the college football playoff is gone? What happens then? Like, their season now is for naught because they lost that opportunity to potentially get to the college football playoff. And the best thing, I guess you could say, is, okay, oh, we can just win the American again and go play the SEC championship game runner-up in the Peach Bowl or whatever.
Yeah, I still think the goal at the end is big enough to get that, to keep your eyes on that. And it's not going to be a season loss. Although, you know, you get UCF coming in a couple weeks later, and then I believe SMU's at home. Yeah, like, the other thing is I think they're going to have the goods, you know.
How about going to Navy and Tulane in back-to-back weeks? How about play those two offenses?
Yeah. Well, if there's a team that's going to do it in that conference, give me Cincinnati's defense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, I see what you're saying. But I do think I mean, listen, all they could do is ask for it and they got it. And at some point it's on you, it's on the players, you know? And if things don't work out in those two games, that's on the players to rally. And that's why, you know, you recruit the guys you do and create the locker room you do to get back up off the deck if things don't work out. And I just think Cincinnati does have the goods. I really do. And I think the world of Ritter, and I really think the world of Fickell. So
yes, absolutely.
I'm confident into seeing that. And I just can't wait to see it. But as far else as the American, I'm just trying to think. USF, I got no. Oh, go Pirates. I mean, this is our last crack at our guy, Holton Ahlers. I mean, he's got – look at that start to the schedule. You want to talk about a guy that could bust out? Man, there's – you talk about opportunity at the beginning of a schedule. ECU's got that. So go Pirates.
We will be rooting for them, as always, the official always. Team of the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast.
There you go. All right, Pac-12.
Yep.
You love Oregon. You're on the season win total of 9.
Another bet that I came across because the number moved mm-hmm. was USC, their conference win total now at South Point is 7. It got bet up from 6.5 to 7. And I'm willing to take a shot on the under at 7 for USC. I mean, 9 conference games, remember.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a team last year that, I mean, easily could have lost to Arizona State, UCLA. Like, there were plenty of opportunities for them to lose. And I just don't think they are as good as their name brand. And I think at 7, it's probably a push of a worst-case opportunity. But I know the schedule works out for them and that they get Stanford home. I'm looking at Arizona State. But I think USC gets Stanford home, too. Yeah,
week 2.
They get Stanford at home. They get Utah at home. They get UCLA at home. But they go to Arizona State. But I think that they're going to lose at least twice in this conference and maybe potentially lose 3 times. So I think if you can get under 7 at South Point for Pac-12 wins for SC, I would take a shot there. I have a question for you. Bud Elliott, who is a listener to our pod and sent me a note about your Utah pick there. Mm-hmm. He said, would you be open or would you rather play Utah to win the South at like plus 250 or whatever it was, sure, as opposed to playing them to win the conference at bigger odds, because they would be an underdog most likely if they were to play Utah or Washington or Oregon or Washington in the Pac-12 championship game?
Yeah, I heard that. Somebody else sent me that too. For sure. I think that's a great play. Like I said, I think, and you just touched on it with the USC factor of the idea of everybody being up on each other and look, I mean, you pointed out, and if they don't, I mean, God forbid they slipped up early. But look at how they closed the conference at Arizona State, at Cal, who they've lost to recently, and versus UCLA. So you need, I mean, they're definitely going to lose one of those, I would think.
Yeah, easily, probably 2. UCLA should have beaten them last year.
Oh, God, what a beat.
One of the worst results of the year for us.
What a beat. No, that's an interesting thing about USC. But, yeah, back to your thing about Utah. I do like them on this side. You know, talking to people out there, the quarterback competition is as close as they're making it sound to be. Rising is a guy who didn't finish the year. And obviously Brewer, who was a guy I mentioned, but it's hot and heavy there. And like I said, to me, with the question with SC is how good are you on both lines of scrimmage? Because that's where Utah is going to get you. You know, you're not going to be better than them. And is your talent good enough? And we saw them eke out those games based on that skill talent, which they deserve credit for, because that's why they're SC and that's why they don't have anything else. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, before we totally get off of Utah, maybe I'm guilty of being like prisoner of the moment or just having a bad taste in my mouth from a couple of years ago after really hyping them to, if they were to win the Pac-12 championship game and to get to the playoff. And they laid an absolute egg in that game. Mm-hmm. They laid an absolute egg in the bowl game. Like something about the way that year ended that I got a hard time like buying in this year that they're legit, they're good, they're a Pac-12 title and a college football playoff contender. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm just playing a little bit of a victim from being so high, of being burned on them a couple of years ago. But I just worry a little bit about them being, and so many people seemingly on Utah this year. That would worry me a little bit.
Yeah, I think. I think what you have with Utah is what a lot of people have with USC. You know, like, hey, you know, we hear about it, you got to do it. And that year with Utah, I just thought they had an opportunity. They overachieved a ton. And then when it came down to it, they played their worst game in the worst spot, which I have said year in and year out. That's what happens in the Pac-12. When we do get that ultimate opportunity. So I hope I'm not going to jinx Cincinnati talking about the opportunity they have this year, knowing what I've seen in Pac-12 teams. But that's totally different and not related. Who do you think? They both have the same win total. Utah, USC, 8.5. Who wins more?
I would go Utah just because of the way the schedule works out. I think the Weber State game, the San Diego State game, Wazoo at home, Arizona State at home. I would lean towards Utah, at least going 9-3. That would be my lean. So who would you land on in the South? Would you take a shot with UCLA?
I'm starting to lean that way because here's the deal too. And I'm not listening, Arizona State fans, I'm not avoiding you at all. I don't want anything to do with it because I have no idea what to, I know Jaden Daniels is there and Herm's talking about how he's taking steps forward and reading about how his accuracy has improved. But I just think all that's going on, I don't want mm-hmm. – it just feels like it could blow up at any point. And I just don't want to put anything on that because of what's at stake here and seeing how vulnerable every team is in the South. I don't want to take one of the favorites.
When I tweeted that out last week or whenever it was about Arizona State not being ranked in the coaches' poll, the number of texts or calls or messages that I got about Arizona State, be careful. What's going on off the field? They're overrated. Just hearing some other things, like it was alarming to me enough to be like, okay, maybe I'm the one in the wrong here. Maybe I am overrating them, and everybody else is right. Usually, I like when I have a contrarian feel on picks, and I kind of disagree with some people, but this one worried me. But UCLA, I know. They very easily could have won every game they played last year. How they lost the UCLA game, the USC game was amazing. Backup quarterback at Oregon throwing the pick six before the half. The Colorado game, I think they turned the ball over, four straight possessions to start the game. It's a turnover fest. Like, Stanford game to lose the way they did. Like, they were right there. I think Chip loves his tight ends. With Dulcich there, he thinks he has one of the best units there in the country. Mm-hmm. And I think he's pretty high on Zach Charbonnet, who's come on in, transferred from Michigan.
That's right.
And being out there, I think he likes him a lot. And I think he feels pretty good about where his team is right now. And so I might be inclined, despite the schedule not necessarily being the best in that conference, who the hell knows?
And I'm as guilty as anybody. When I talk about the schedule, like at some point when you're going to be good enough, you're going to win those games.
Correct.
You know? And that's what made. And I try not to overanalyze the schedules.
About that all the time. Reason I joke about that all the time, saying like if you're not good enough, a loss is going to find you anyway. It doesn't matter where who the opponent is or where the game is.
All right, so I can see the UCLA thing, but I'll stick with Utah in there. When you look at the North, we mentioned Oregon, your love with there, and I get it. The schedule. I should say the talent is there. I pointed out last week about how the schedule also brings out a point where he could bring along the freshman quarterback. But I just wanted to touch on a couple other teams. Oregon State.
Yes, thank you.
Was very promising last year. They finally got the win over Oregon. They beat Cal again. But, man, the schedule.
Chris tore his hamstring.
Yeah.
And he was out for the year. Their offense really struggled.
Yeah. But I mean, the number for them is 4.5. Unbearable schedule. They get USC, Utah, and ASU from the South. Four of the first five conference games are versus conference contenders. What are they going to do week one at Purdue? And that defense has to be better. They only forced 6 turnovers last year. I know it was a condensed season, but you in this conference, you got to find if you're not going to be able to, you know, be as stout as some, you know, the top teams are, you got to create turnover somehow. So Oregon State, who I love what Jonathan Smith has done, seeing how that was left by Anderson. But I think Jamar Jefferson is a huge loss to the run game there. So that's a team that I think they'll be heard from.
Cal I'm interested in as well.
Yes. And
they're right on that 6-win deal. A team that, again, what they played 4 games, they didn't play for like a month.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, I think they'll be good.
They beat Oregon.
I don't care how they did it. They beat them. And they lost Stanford in that ridiculous game. I think they have an opportunity. I think Cameron Good is one of the better defensive players in the country. That doesn't
no doubt
get as much hype. You just have to wonder about offensively. Like, can Garbrus be healthy? We saw that a couple of years ago. How once he went down, our offense was nothing. So I think Cal was the 18 last year, and I think because of the way the season went, not only playing 4 games, I think this is a hungry team. So you look at their schedule, TCU on the road, Washington on the road, Oregon on the road, Stanford on the road, UCLA on the road. That's a tough road schedule, but I think they're good enough and well-coached enough to be able to get at least one or two of those teams.
I'm on the Cal over after diving in on this. You mentioned the offense. They've been in the hundreds, ranked in the hundreds the last 4 years, and that's got to get better. I look at, you know, returning starters, all that stuff you want to say, but again, they only have to replace four starters. Garber's probably has the most experience in the conference at that position. In those games, they did beat Oregon last year, so the good is good. I think they have five guarantee wins. I think they beat Sac State, they beat Wazoo, they beat Colorado, they beat Oregon State, and they beat Arizona. Now you're going to get one out of these four to push, and maybe two. You get Nevada. I think they're going to beat Nevada week one. I really do. And then you get SC coming in. You mentioned at Stanford, that's not a road game. And then UCLA late in the year. This could be done early on.
I love that you said that's not a road game.
It's not a road game. So I like the Cal over here. People know what I think of Wilcox. He's 500 in his tenure there, but you go ahead and take over that situation and tell me how you come out over 500. Wazoo is a team. I don't know what to expect.
Peter Sermon, by the way, now defensive coordinator as DeRuiter is gone.
Former teammate of Wilcox at Oregon.
Correct.
I think Cal gets over 500 this year. Wazoo, I don't know what to expect. Washington is a team. I know everybody's talking about them, experience, bringing what they're bringing back. I just go back. I can't not think about that game against Stanford that they lost. I was expecting a lot more. I don't want to put it on one thing, but I love the head coach. But what are they going to do when the opportunity arises? Are they going to win in Ann Arbor? That's a big one for the conference. That'd be nice. But I don't think they're in Oregon's tier, and I know they get Oregon at home. Stanford, it's all on the quarterback. The defense is not going to be good. When you look back, you got to replace a left tackle, a corner, your quarterback, and your center, who are all drafted. That doesn't usually happen at Stanford. So the schedule, I think it's the toughest in the country playing all Power 5 teams. I know people in Fayetteville will yell at me and say they have the toughest schedule, but we are coming to the SEC to play a game, and it means more there. So I think Stanford has the toughest schedule.
All Power Five. Anytime you have 12 Power Fives and 9 conference games, that's
thank you. Thank you. Make sure you pump that on the show. All right. So I expect Utah to play Oregon. You're going to go UCLA, Oregon?
Yeah. Give me UCLA, right. Oregon.
Nice. That'll be a nice mix-up.
I think Chip would take that.
They should have beat him last year in Eugene. That leaves us with our Irish. I have a question for you regarding the Irish. Do they lose a home game? They get Toledo, Cincinnati, USC, North Carolina, Navy, and Georgia Tech.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
North Carolina will beat them.
Hmm. Don't you have a feeling that that's going to be like a – somehow the weather will be in the 20s.
Tuba factor.
Back-to-back weeks too, Notre Dame. I mean, and you know what's tricky? Well, they get a bye week before USC, but that can't –
game in Blacksburg, you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, you're hitting only home games, so.
Yeah, no, but just the spot, but they get a bye before that. Notre Dame's now up to 9, that win total. We talked about that on Daily Wager the other day.
Yeah.
I think it's a perfect number. I do think the offense is going to be pretty darn good. The changeover on defense is where I look at, and that's – how fast can they get things cranked up, you know, week one? Because I have no idea what to expect in Tallahassee. I know you're waiting for that line to come down, and you like Notre Dame week.
Yeah, I am. Yep.
But I think the offense is going to be there. I think Cone's got some nice guys along his side. They surrounded him with some good talent. They're going to have more speed at wide receiver. They got another stud at tight end.
Mayer's a stud.
Yeah. The running backs. Would you take Howard their two Williams. Running backs over anybody in the country?
That's a tough question. Williams is pretty damn good.
The other guy's fast.
Who else? Yeah, I was gonna say who would the other would Davion Henderson and Master Teague at Ohio State?
No.
Kennedy Brooks and Eric Gray at Oklahoma.
Don't they have is that the Tennessee transfer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I don't think so.
And the other kid transferred.
Alabama, you know, has got a stable. But yeah. I think I would take Notre Dame's running backs over anybody in the country.
Yeah, I think Cohn has something to prove. I think he's a locker room guy. Team that's kind of gravitated towards him. I think Wisconsin kind of things got a little unraveled last year when he got hurt and then Mertz took over like that. I think nine and three is like a worst case. I think at this point, like, don't you have to trust Brian Kelly, who's been to the playoff two of the last 3 years, that even with all this turnover, they're gonna find a way to win nine games. Maybe they lose to Wisconsin, maybe they lose to North Carolina, but are they gonna get tripped up a couple more times as a big favorite? I don't know. I think 9-3 is a worst case scenario for the Irish, but that's a tough number. I wouldn't want to go over 9. If you find 8.5, then I'd go over 8.5. But 9's a tough number. I think you're probably playing for a push.
Fascinating game at Soldier Field, September 25th. That's two teams I love to see play against each other, because what's going to give?
In Chicago, by the way, that'll be really a great scene.
You know Jim Leonard's going to have that defense ready to go. I think the world of him as a defensive coordinator. But, yeah, I see
Kyle Hamilton, one of my favorite players in the country.
Oof,
love the way he plays.
God, is he talented.
So good.
Yeah, I don't see – if I had to take it, I would go over. I think they can win 10.
I'd really play over before I would under.
Correct.
I said I had to take one of them, I'd play over before I would under.
I'm with you there. Bucknut, anything else before you kick us out?
No, I'm good.
Yeah?
Straight for the season kickoff.
How's the quarterback situation in Columbus?
Weekly
update. Who's got the upper hand?
Ryan Day said that CJ Stroud's starting to separate himself.
Okay.
So they held him out today. They said they'd do that throughout camp to give him a break.
The 11 Warriors like that?
Yeah, I think that's who everyone thought was going to get the start.
Okay.
Quinn Ewers is on campus now.
I was going to say, when did they start clamoring for Ewers?
I mean, you know the fan base. I think they already are. Some are.
If they only score like 27 against Oregon in week two,
listen.
Then they.
CJ Stroud finished. He was the MVP at the Elite 11 over Bryce Young. So CJ Stroud comes in with a lot of.
They are going to be just fine at quarterback. They're going to be just fine at running back with Henderson. They have like three other wide receivers other than Olave and Garrett Wilson. And they got Rucker to tight. I made it Ohio State to win the national title bet yesterday.
I was just going to ask you, who would you rather have? Ohio to go undefeated, Ohio State or Oklahoma?
Ohio State. It's not even a question.
Oh, I forgot. Iowa State. Is it true that Reese Davis is going to call Matt Campbell Bear Campbell?
No, that would be an insult to Matt Campbell.
What do you think about Reese voting Oklahoma number one?
Bad move.
Ooh, why?
Why? I think people have that recency factor in there with Oklahoma. Okay. Like, yeah, they finished great. Mm-hmm. They were an overtime debacle away from being 1-3 after mm-hmm. that Red River game, and then they caught a lot of the garbage teams in the Big 12 and won. Yes, Rattler improved and the defense improved dramatically, but I think everybody's so hung up on this Florida game, where like Florida's season ended after the SEC championship game. Like they played nobody, and mm-hmm. Trask's mind was on the draft, and like they're still the best team in the Big 12, but. There are more opportunities to lose there in the Big 12 for Oklahoma, whether it's TCU, Texas, who's played them tough, even though Texas has been there, Iowa State. Like they lost Kansas State, the 20-something point favorite. Like they lose a ton of games as big favorites. So Ohio State, if they don't lose to Oregon, if Oregon doesn't go in there and trip them up, they're not losing the season.
All right. Shoot us all your questions on us, your questions on Twitter for next week. We will get to all of them. Didn't have a chance to get to them this week. And then we will let you know what we're going to preview next week. That's it. Bear, take us away.
Less you bet, the more you lose when you win.
You can listen or follow the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Plus, don't miss more from Stanford Steve on ESPN SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. And check out the Bear on College Game Day on ESPN.